Welcome to CounselorAudioSource.net. Counselor Audio Source is a weekly podcast dedicated to the professional enhancement of practicing counselors, supervisors, and counselor educators. Look for us on the web at CounselorAudioSource.net. Hello, I'm Dr. Marty Gentius from Kent State University, and this week on Counselor Audio Source, Dr. Jill Nelson, contributing editor, interviews Dr. Wade Hannon, both from North Dakota State University, about the person-centered approach in counseling.
Well, thanks, Wade, for agreeing to be interviewed for Counselor Audio Source. I guess I first will ask you what your background and interest with the person-centered approach is.
Well, thank you, Jill, for inviting me. I guess I became interested in Roger's work when I was in graduate school in the mid-70s. In undergraduate school, I was very much interested in existential and phenomenological philosophy. And so when I came across Roger's, his ideas really made a lot of sense, having come from that background. And then I was fortunate in my doctoral program to have a professor who became my major professor who was person-centered. In my master's program, there weren't any person-centered faculty, but at the doctoral level, I had Don Rye at the University of Arkansas, who unfortunately died at an early age about 5 years ago. He was only 61, but Don was a major influence as a person. He was also someone who really embodied the core conditions of Roger's approach, and Don was without a doubt the most non-judgmental and accepting person that I have ever had a relationship with, and that was very good both as a student and then as a practitioner and educator to be able to rely on him for support as I was going through different things.
Good, great. Maybe could you just share with us your perceptions or your perspective on the history or the background of the person-centered approach?
Okay. Well, there's an excellent book by Jeffrey Barrett Leonard, and I'm blanking on the title right now, but it's basically puts Roger's ideas in historical context and talks about influences on Roger's. One major influence was John Dewey, who was very big in talking about democracy and education and talking about the freedom that individuals would experience in that kind of a environment. But Roger's got his doctorate in, well, I think it was 27 from Columbia University. And then originally it was called the non-directive approach to separate it from Williamson's directive approach in counseling. And then in the 50s, I believe, it started being called client-centered. And then in the late 70s or 80s, it morphed into the person-centered approach because Rogers was applying his ideas to contexts outside of counseling and therapy and was using it in community settings and so on.
So the client, the word client became...
person, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Good. So where would you say, how do you see, what's the state of the person-centered approach today?
Well, I think many of the approaches notable exception of Ellis's ideas about working with people, that they appropriate some of Roger's ideas about the relationship and about being empathic and so on. So it's had a huge influence in terms of all the approaches to counseling and therapy. It's just unfortunately that many of those approaches forget about the non-directive part of it, and they sort of use the relationship to trick the client into being comfortable, and then they start being disrespectful of the client and start directing them and telling them what they should or shouldn't be doing. Mm-hmm. As an approach separate from other approaches, I think it's still alive and well. It's not as widely used in the United States as it was even 30 years ago when I was in graduate school. In other parts of the world, it's very prevalent. In England, there are a number of counselor training programs that are person-centered, and the majority of counselors in England would identify themselves as person-centered. Mm. Throughout Europe, it's a very strong approach. In parts of Latin America, it's very strong. In parts of Asia, like in Japan, the person-centered approach is still very prevalent, and in Taiwan, Hong Kong, there's person-centered practitioners and educators there, and then in South Africa there's a person-centered presence as well. Rogers was in South Africa before he died, and there's been a number of people there that have been person-centered.
Mm-hmm. What's your guess about why it's flourishing in other areas of the world, but not so much here?
Well, I think because here in the U.S., the predominant view of people has been so heavily influenced by the economic system that both in terms of the relation of the individual to the profit-making status of the economy, but also through the influence of managed care and changes like that, where we have begun as a society to go back to looking at people as objects. We have gone to looking at counseling as sort of like fixing a car. You know, if it has a bad carburetor, you replace the carburetor. If it has a bad fuel pump, you replace the fuel pump. And there's a view of people as being objects that can be, quote, fixed, close quote, as if they were cars, and there's a lot of these, as they're called, manualized, or as I prefer to call it, MIC counseling, that where you have a, if it's this, then you do A, B, and C. If it's that, you do B, C, and D, and so on and so forth. So people are beginning to kind of look at people as if they were just things to be manipulated. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's part of it, because the person-centered approach is at its core respectful of human beings and respectful of each individual as a unique person. And our society is not very much interested in looking at those unique things, unless it's something that a corporation can make money off of. You know, if you can sell records or sell books, or if you can sell automobiles, whatever.
Mm-hmm. So how would you go about fixing that problem, I guess?
Well, I'm not sure I would want to fix something, but
or mix
for
it
me,
it.
it's. For one thing, the person approach is at its core, I think, countercultural. When it was started by Rogers all those decades ago, and in its various manifestations, it's always been countercultural. It's about establishing a environment where people can grow and flourish and to begin actualizing themselves. One of the things that has happened over the years is that there have not been a lot of academicians that were person-centered. Now, Rogers left teaching back in the 60s, I believe it was, and went to the Western Behavioral Sciences Institute, which then he and some other people formed what is now called the Center for the Studies of the Person, or CSP. And from CSP, he did his work in terms of offering training for people, doing encounter groups, workshops, and seeing clients. And CSP is still in existence in the La Jolla section of San Diego. But there's not been a lot of folks either in counseling or psychology or other areas that were person-centered that were teaching in academic settings. And so I think part of it is that people are person-centered, that are person-centered, that we need to have more of those that are involved with the education of counselors and psychologists and so on. And there's some people in counselor education that I'm aware of that are person-centered and that are doing that. There's a couple of psychology programs that have, like at the, there's one in Chicago that has a minor in their doctoral program in the person-centered approach. Also, part of the problem, I think, is that with KCREP, they talk about being exposed to a variety of theoretical influences. And oftentimes people take that to mean that you cannot have a program that is theoretically focused and theoretically based, which I don't think is true. As long as one is exposed to other theories, you could still have a program that would be focused on a particular theory, whether it would be person-centered or you could have one that would even be a broader focus of humanistic approaches in general, mm-hmm. and then you could have within that, you know, person-centered and what other kind of humanistic approaches that are around. And so I think that's part of it is getting more people in counselor training programs that are person-centered, that are teaching classes.
Mm-hmm. I know that you ascribe or believe in the person-centered approach when it comes to pedagogy.
Mm-hmm.
How does that look differently, or how is that different from the traditional approaches?
Well, it's radically different in that you want the students to move from an external locus of evaluation to an internal locus of evaluation, where they don't rely on what other people are saying about them for their view of themselves and their view of their abilities as a person and as a learner, to them be able to look at themselves and saying, well, you know, this is I'm strong in this area, I'm not so strong in this area, so on and so forth.
Is that similar to conditions of worth?
Yes. Okay. Yes, very much, very much. Mm-hmm. And so what I do in my classes is that I don't have assignments. I might have some suggestions of things, but they are just suggested, and students develop a learning plan, and they talk about what they want to get out of the class, and then what they're going to do to help them to facilitate that process, and then at the end of the semester, they evaluate themselves based on their learning plan, and they turn in a grade that they believe that they have earned. And as long as I see that what they have done is what that is consistent with that and that they have actually done those things, then that's the grade that I turn in. I've only had two times, in about probably 10 years of doing classes this way, where I disagreed with students. And that was two cases where students had given themselves B's, and I thought they should get an A, so I gave them A's. One person was upset about that, and another person had no problem with that. The person who was upset, she and I have processed that, and I don't think there's a problem with that today.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that I don't assume that I know things that the student should have to know. My role is to facilitate the process. I share what my views are on things, what my take on different things are. But more so, it's to facilitate that process and to help them to look at what they're thinking and what they're feeling and so on. And it's more of a facilitation process than a quote teacher close quote, and I view myself as a facilitator of learning and not as a teacher. And the other thing is that's different is a deep and abiding respect for the student. And there's from other colleagues that I've had and from folks that I've known that have taught in other programs and faculty that I had as a student, the majority of them don't really have that. They view themselves as some kind of a quote expert close quote who is kind of imparting that the knowledge to the student. I think Roger's approach really dovetails well with Paulo Ferrer, whose book Pedagogy of the Oppressed is an excellent book and one that I use in one of my classes. Ferrer is obviously more political than Rogers, but mm-hmm. But I think that if they were alive today and could get together to discuss things, I'm sure they would find that they agreed on most things. So I think that there's a lot of Rogers' work on education, and his classic book is Freedom to Learn. My favorite is the first edition of that, which is still available through a variety of sources. And I use that book along with the Ferrer book in the doctoral teaching class that we have in our program.
Mm-hmm. Good, thanks. What if someone today were wanting to find out more information about the person-centered approach or to become active in this, what avenues would they have to do
well,
that?
Excuse me. There is an organization here in the U.S. called the Association for the Development of the Person-Centered Approach, and we have annual meetings that are held throughout the country. This last summer, the ADPCA was held here at North Dakota State University in Fargo. I was the chair of the conference this summer, and so people can find out about that by going to adpca.org. It's the webpage for the organization. The conference is going to be held in New York City this next summer. Mm-hmm. And so it moves around. The year before it was here in Fargo, it was in Warwick, England. So it moves around quite a bit.
In quite a variety of places,
yes,
it sounds like.
Yes, yes. The organization publishes a quarterly newsletter, which is an online newsletter, and then there's a journal that currently is published one time per year. There also is an international organization called the World Association for Person-Centered and Experiential Psychotherapy and Counseling. I don't think it would have been possible to have a longer name than that for the organization.
It's a very long name.
Yes. And I was at the conference in Chicago where the organization was formally launched and was able to amend. The original name lacked "and counseling" at the end. And so to include those of us that are counselors, I made a motion to change the name to add that because, as I said in speaking to my motion, that there are a number of us that are person-centered that don't view ourselves as psychotherapists, rather as counselors. And mm-hmm. And it meets every 3 years. This last summer it met in Potsdam, Germany. And then in 3 years it's going to be in England. I forget which town in England. But that would be another one. And I don't know off the top of my head what the webpage for that is, but one could just look up the World Association for Person-Centered, and I suspect you would find it there. The World Association has both organizational and individual memberships that are available. Most of the organizations, like the British Association for Person-Centered Approach, it's a member of the World Association. The U.S. Association is not a member. The U.S. Association is, in many regards, a little more what would be the term? The U.S. Association basically is an anarchist association in the true sense of anarchy, in that it's against hierarchy and it's against things that separate people, and very much egalitarian. So there have been debates over the past few years about whether ADPCA should be a part of the World Association or not. And ADPCA uses a consensus to make decisions, and there have been too many people that have objected for us to reach a consensus decision on that. But so there's those two different groups that are available. Within ACA, there's the Association, Counseling Association for Humanistic Education and Development, CAHED, that there are people in there that are person-centered. Lou Thayer is one person that comes to mind. But there are some folks there that are person-centered, and that would be another group where folks could link up with person-centered practitioners and counselor educators.
Mm-hmm. And is there a place, journals or other places where you see person-centered publications?
Yeah, there's been, in the Journal of Counseling Development, there's been articles over the years in different aspects of the person-centered approach, counselor education and supervision, and other ACA journals. I've seen things over the years. There's also in psychology journals, like the Counseling Psychologist, have been articles. The Humanistic Psychologist, which is a division of one of the divisions of APA. There's the Association for Humanistic Psychology, their journal, which I believe is called the Journal of Humanistic Psychology, if my memory serves me right, that has articles. So there are a number of different venues where people get person-centered work published.
Mm-hmm. Great. Where do you see the person-centered approach headed in the future? What's the future?
Well, it's really hard to say. I've never really been much on trying to forecast the future, but I do see there are a number of younger folks, both in counseling and in counselor education, that are very interested in the person-centered approach, and they consider themselves person-centered. Here at North Dakota State, there's a number of the master students that, when they go through the techniques class that I usually do in the summertime, and they like the person-centered approach and would identify themselves as person-centered, although I'm not sure how thoroughly that they grasp the approach. But because I think that nothing against the students, just that I think that to truly be a person-centered practitioner requires a lot of practice and a lot of understanding, and to be person-centered. And I think also that in other classes and then in work settings, that people are oftentimes to borrow a phrase from Star Wars, they're seduced by the dark side of the Force and start becoming directive and start thinking of themselves as someone who knows things that they should be imparting to their clients, which is, I think, a pretty dangerous kind of thing to do. But it's hard to say. There's the myth that person-centered counseling is always a long process, and I worked in community mental health centers for a number of years in the 80s, and I would say that the mean number of sessions that I would have with clients would be probably around six. There were some that only came in for two or three, and some that were there for several. People will say, well, with this kind of managed care and employee assistance program kind of milieu, where people sometimes only have two or three sessions, that you have to, quote-unquote, be directive, which I think is a very short-sighted. But it's I think that as a person-centered practitioner, that one can be in those environments and can have a positive impact in regard to clients that one works with. You have to sort of wink and nod about all the diagnosis and all that stuff. Whenever I teach the diagnosis class, I always say that I will only do it as long as the students agree that they won't really believe in it. They just need to learn it because it's something that's required for people that work in community settings. But don't start thinking of clients in those categories. You know, mm-hmm. Oftentimes I would have colleagues that would say, "Well, you know, at 2 o'clock I have my paranoid skits coming in, or at 3 o'clock I have my manic depressive, and so on." It was no longer seeing a person; they were seeing a diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's going to go, I don't know. I hope that our society moves away from this instrumental, mechanistic view of people that we have. I think we are hurting a lot as a group of people because of these assumptions and beliefs that are being held, that are being kind of forced on us by the dominant culture. So hopefully we'll have some sort of a humanistic revival, and specifically a person-centered revival. So.
Well, good. Well, thank you so much for your time. Are there things that I didn't touch on or things you feel were left out you'd like to add?
I can't really recall anything that was thinking about before I came in. I would like to thank you for asking me to do this and giving me the opportunity to share my thoughts and feelings with folks that are listening, and mm-hmm. I hope that there are people that find this helpful or meaningful in some way.
Yeah, I appreciate your time. I know I've learned a lot just from working with you and from this today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've just heard an interview of Dr. Wade Hannon, done by contributing editor Dr. Jill Nelson, both of North Dakota State University, about the person-centered approach in counseling. Look for previous podcasts, show notes, and listener feedback on the podcast website at counselaraudiosource.net. Listeners can leave comments or questions for our interview guests or hosts through our Skype.com internet telephone ID, Counselor Audio Source, or by calling 330-871. Counseling techniques and interventions discussed in the Counselor Audio Source broadcast are meant for use by counseling professionals, and Counselor Audio Source is not held liable for any use of the techniques mentioned in the program. Our music bed today is Memorial Day from Jamie Beauchamp. His and other PodSafe music can be found in the PodSafe Music Network at podshow.com. Counselor Audio Source is licensed under the Creative Commons, a nonprofit organization offering a flexible copyright for creative work.